is taking place. The remote hearing of the capital investment for February 17th is called to order. This remote hearing is taking place in accordance to House Rule 10.01. It is being live streamed by the House Public Information Office. Mr. Wilcox, please take the roll.
Chair Lee.
Lee present.
Lee present. Vice Chair Murphy.
Murphy present.
Murphy present. Representative Erdahl. Representative Erdahl. Representative Agbaje.
Present.
Agbaje present. Representative Berg.
Present.
Berg present. Representative Davids.
Davids present.
Davids present. Representative Frankie.
Frankie present.
Frankie present. Representative Freiberg.
Present.
Freiberg present. Representative Hansen.
Present.
Hansen present. Representative Hewitt.
Present.
Hewitt present. Representative Lilly.
Lilly present.
Lilly present. Representative Lucero.
Lucero present.
Lucero present. Representative Moran.
Present.
Moran present. Representative Pearson. Representative Pearson. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh present.
Raleigh present. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen present.
Rasmussen present. Representative Ryer.
Ryer present.
Ryer present. Representative West.
West present.
West present. Representative Zhang.
Zhang present.
Zhang present. Representative Erdahl.
Erdahl present.
Erdahl present. And then Representative Pearson. All right, Mr. Chair, we do have a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Wilcox. Quorum is present. Chair Murphy, may I have a motion to approve the minutes for Tuesday, February 15th?
Yes, I move the approval of the minutes for February 15th as printed.
Chair Murphy moves approval of the minutes for Tuesday, February 15th. Any discussions? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes for Tuesday, February 13th are approved. Members, today we will continue working our way through the state agency capital budget request. To start it off, we have Deed Commissioner Grove here with us. Welcome to the committee. Commissioner, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee. Good morning, members of the committee. My name is Steve Grove. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development, and it's my pleasure to get to join you all this morning. We're going to pull up some slides here in a moment, and I'll walk you through the agency's request. But I'll start just by saying all of these programs that DEED runs as it relates to infrastructure are just critical to ensuring that communities across our state have what they need to grow, have what they need to grow jobs, to attract companies, have the core infrastructure that's required to do great economic development. These programs are longstanding, consistently get bipartisan support. And there are these programs really that are at the heart of what government should do to make sure businesses can flourish and grow and thrive. So I'm going to walk through each of these programs in a bit more detail. This committee, of course, is familiar with each of them and happy to answer any questions that you all have. So we'll start with BDPI, and BDPI is the Business Development Public Infrastructure Program. This program is focused specifically on Greater Minnesota communities, and really it provides for these communities infrastructure dollars needed to make improvements that will help economic development happen. So think wastewater collection and treatment, drinking water and storm sewers, utility extensions and roads, things that we need to make plots of land, development projects attractive to businesses and developers who want to come and grow and build on those sites. It is based, again, in Greater Minnesota cities only. The grant program pays about half of eligible public infrastructure costs. So there's skin in the game from the partner as well. And the funds are not to exceed $2 million in a two-year funding period. This program is incredibly popular. We consistently have a lot of applicants lining up to pull in these funds. We're currently at a balance of $0. So the fund has been tapped. We are asking for $7 million for this program based on past demand and what we see is the market for these grants, which again are so popular and lead very much to jobs and opportunity in Greater Minnesota. So thrilled about this program, really eager to go big on it here with our ask and help these Greater Minnesota cities prepare for growth at a time when that's central to Minnesota's next step as an economy. One example of a BDPI program that we wanted to just highlight to give you kind of a flavor for this is in Owatonna. The city of Owatonna was awarded $176,000 in change for some work of new streets and utilities around Bosch Automotive Services. This allowed them to access their 266,000 square foot warehouse, and it allowed for 50 new jobs and $16 million in private investment. So if you think about $176,000 from the state leading to $16 million in private investment, these are programs that really leverage the private sector and leverage businesses to grow in these communities across our state. The next program we wanted to highlight is TEDI, the Transportation Economic Development Infrastructure Program. And this is a unique program where we partner directly with the Department of Transportation. It's a great longstanding partnership between MnDOT and DEED. This program is statewide, and it's really created to foster that kind of interagency coordination that our businesses and developers really demand from government to get economic development right. And of course, as the name indicates, this program is focused on transportation in particular. Think pre-design, land acquisition, construction, reconstruction, infrastructure improvements. Think adding an extra off-ramp to a freeway to get to a business. Those are the kinds of things that really a state government needs to do to allow for growth and to allow for transportation to be a key factor in that growth. This is a program that is focused across the state. It currently has $0 in the bank, again, a popular program, and it's always oversubscribed. So a really important program here. $4 million is our ask, again, based on analysis of past demand. And just one example of it, if we looked at Sherburne County, they were awarded almost $1 million to expand County Road 53. That will provide access to that Becker Business Park, where we're working on a deal with Google for a data center there. That kind of project can create 50 million jobs and $600 million of investment on the site. So again, the ratios here of state investment to private sector investment are pretty stunning. When you think of $1 million in and $600 million out, this is exactly the role state government should be playing in these projects. And then the last grant program we wanted to highlight is the Innovative Business Development Infrastructure Program, or IBD. IBDPI, these acronyms are sometimes tough to spit out, but this is a great program. It's sort of similar to that first program I mentioned on business public infrastructure, but this one, the legislature has determined really should focus on innovative businesses. And you know, our definition there is a business that is engaged in or committed to engaging in innovation in Minnesota through one of the following areas: proprietary technology to add value to a product, research or developing a proprietary product, researching and developing a new technology in fields of tourism, forestry, mining, transportation, and green manufacturing. So innovation is really broadly defined across every industry that's out there, but it's about these new product developments. And this program, also popular, this one's also statewide. And in this program, we focus on everything from wastewater systems to drinking systems to sewer systems and beyond. And this brings the kind of jobs that are going to animate the future of Minnesota's economy. We want the most innovative companies in the world to base themselves here, or if they are here, to expand here. And infrastructure is often needed to make that happen. So think about this program as a way to grow great paying jobs in industries that are really going to build this next chapter of our economy. And for this program, again, we see a strong pipeline. Our ask here is for $1 million for IBDPI, and excited to proceed on this program in particular, given the kinds of jobs it brings. Just to give you kind of a flavor for it, you know, we recently awarded one of these grants to the city of Woodbury for about $500,000 that will construct a couple of turn lanes and infrastructure improvements on the land there. This is for a company called Condeva, which is a spinoff of 3M that's focused on drug delivery and manufacturing. And these dollars are bringing in $35 million in investment in this new structure in Woodbury, and 35 new jobs in Minnesota. So these three programs in our ask for BDPI of $7 million, the TEDI program for $4 million, and IBDPI for $1 million are really just great opportunities to grow Minnesota's economy across the state, to play that role that government should play in economic development and help developers and business grow jobs for Minnesota. So Chair Lee, thanks for having me. Happy to answer any questions that the committee might have.
Thank you, Commissioner. Members, do we have any questions for the Commissioner? Representative Abaje.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Grove. I just wanted a little bit of clarification on the IBDPI project.
It stated that it was like $1 million, and then the city of Woodbury was awarded $475,000. So if it's a statewide project, is there more of a need there, or how is that working out? You could just kind of explain that.
Commissioner Grove.
Fairly, Representative, it's a great question. As part of our ask here, we looked at the amount available we still have in the fund, and we have about $2.5 million available in IDPI grants right now. We expect those dollars to go quickly, but in trying to manage the amount that will come in versus the amount that is there, with a program that's on a rolling basis, $1 million put us at, you know, 3.5 total that we would have for the coming biennium, which is why we landed at that number.
Thank you.
Representative Badger. So Commissioner Grove, follow up on that, can you tell us, you know, over the last biennium, how much an application have the agency received, and how much are you actually fulfilling those needs that you're seeing with regards to applications?
Chair Lee, is there a particular of the three programs? Did you want to know for all three? Or
following
for
up on the IBDPI,
IBDPI. You know, I'm going to, if it's okay with you, I have my colleague Meredith Doibach, who runs the program, who might have the numbers a little more firmly in her head. If you wouldn't mind me passing to her, she might be able to answer this question better.
Please proceed, identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Meredith Doibach, and I'm the Executive Director of the Office of Community Finance at DEED. For the innovative program, over the last couple of years, this program, while very important, moves a little bit slower than our Greater Minnesota Business Development Public Infrastructure because of the innovative portion of that. We have some great projects that are coming in that are super substantial. Over the last couple of years, in 2017, we had a little over $1.1 million that was awarded from the legislature. All of that money went out the door. We had 2018, we had about $2 million. So the projects that we award, I don't have the numbers in front of me of how many we've done each year, but it's a pretty steady number. And the money that we've gotten from the legislature, we have put to good use and awarded out on those projects.
So the question that I have is, I understand that the amount that we have given from the legislature, how much in applications are we seeing? Is it exceeding the amount that has been appropriated from the legislature? And if that is the case, then why are we only asking for $1 million this year and not a larger amount so that we could address some of these applications that we're seeing come in?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as Commissioner Grove has said, the numbers that we asked for was a good balance for the other programs of what we see the demand coming in for. We feel that asking for $1 million for this, as Commissioner Grove said, with the balance of a little over $2 million, will be adequate for us based on the past coming in of projects to be able to fulfill the need that's out there.
So if you could follow up with my committee staff on the amount of applications that has come in over the last biennium, just so that we can have a comparison on what is the amount of the request that's coming in and the actual dollars that's going out and it's been appropriated from the state, that would be great.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'd be happy to do that.
Chair Lee, if I might.
Commissioner.
One other thing just for the community to keep in mind is obviously the past few years have been somewhat unique in the field of economic development, given the pandemic and its influence. And so there are certain programs where the application flow shifted due to that. We are seeing this winter and spring just an influx of applications and excitement around the pipeline for these programs. So part of this is we have some money that we are able to push forward based on sort of the pause that many businesses hit on development during COVID. And when you take that existing funding and look at the pipeline that's really heating up again, that's kind of how we landed these numbers. But we would be, as you ask, more than happy to send you over the details on the application flow numbers to kind of illustrate that with more specifics.
Thank you, Commissioner. Seeing no other questions from members, we'll move on. Thank you, Commissioner Grove, for coming by this morning. Really appreciate it. Next up, we have the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. Ms. Knutson, please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning. For the record, I am Katie Knutson. I am the Legislative Director for the Department of Public Safety. Thank you for inviting us here today. I do want to note the commissioner and superintendent did intend to come and be with you all today, but unfortunately has been called away on a public safety issue. So they send their apologies and you get me. So thank you, Jordan, for pulling up our slides. So there are, can you go to the next slide? There are two projects this year for DPS, both are for the BCA. The first is the Southern Minnesota BCA Regional Laboratory and Office for $39.2 million, and then the BCA Maryland Building Improvements for $5 million. Next slide. Before we get into those projects, I did just want to touch on what has happened in the request for BCA services since 2004, which is the year following when they moved into the Maryland headquarter building. What we have seen is that the demand for forensic testing has increased annually. There has been a doubling of case submissions, and forensic testing is up 120% since 2009, and the controlled substances have nearly doubled in 5 years. One important point to note is that on the next slide that you'll see is that when we moved into the building, there was no digital evidence being examined. And just from 2019 to 2021, we've seen a 30% increase in the amount of digital evidence that we have been reviewing. So in 2021, that's about over 85,000 2-hour movies worth of data that the BCA has been examining. The next slide. This shows kind of by section at the BCA what the caseload has done from 2004 to 2018. And almost across the board, you will see exponential growth in each of those categories. Next slide. The physical staff capacity is also overstretched the bounds of the BCA itself. When this was built in 2003, it was built for 366 staff. Current staffing, when fully staffed at the BCA, is 494 staff. So we're over capacity by 128. The space build out will help relieve some of that pressure. And then the building at the Mankato Lab and Regional Office will also significantly reduce the pressure. This slide really highlights that we won't need to ask for staff to fill either the headquarters space or the new regional office. We'll be able to fill both of those buildings with the current positions we have at the BCA. One thing I wanted to note is that I know folks have really done, throughout this pandemic, have really reassessed who needs to be in the office and who doesn't. The BCA has also done that analysis, but because of the nature of the work, and that work is done in teams from crime scene to laboratory to investigations working together to solve cases, being in the office is really critical to that success of their work. Next slide. So let's talk a little bit about the Southern Minnesota BCA Regional Office and Laboratory. Next slide. Again, at $39.2 million, it's approximately 40,000 square foot building. I know the committee toured up at Bemidji. So this is a similarly sized building for Mankato as opposed to Bemidji. So we're really putting an anchor down in Southern Minnesota for the BCA and for the communities in that area. We have a strong partnership in Southern Minnesota in Mankato with both the local chief and the local sheriff, as well as the Chamber of Commerce, very eager for us to build out down there and have this resource available to the local community. I will note the committee did fund the pre-design for this project in 2020, and we completed the pre-design in 2021. This facility will save those local communities down in Southern Minnesota from having to drive to St. Paul to deliver evidence, really helping make sure that the public safety officials that are in that area can stay in that area and serve their communities. Next slide. The last project is the BCA headquarter improvements. Next slide. We have some really, as we mentioned, with our space constraints currently that we're experiencing at the BCA headquarters, since we moved in 2003, we really have, we really need to move forward in building out this space. when the BCA was built, we envisioned having a gun range on the first floor, and that just never came to fruition for a variety of reasons, and has been deemed to not be a necessary build out for that building at this time. So what we have on the first floor of the BCA is a room that has electricity and ventilation, but it has no ceiling and it has a dirt floor. So what we are asking for is to be able to build out that space where we'll be able to, that is ideal for security, energy efficiency, waste reduction, and then overall security of operations and staff that we'd be able to utilize that space for. Also included in this request is the request to finish the fencing along the BCA. We did have a Homeland Security and Emergency Management audit of the security of the space of the building. And they did note that we are vulnerable at the building because of the fence that we currently have there is basically a geographical demarcation, but does nothing to prevent the intentional or unintentional egress of people or vehicles or objects. Next slide. So you can see this is the BCA headquarters from the top. So it would, the perimeter security would be building out along that way. We are not thinking a big ugly fence. This certainly would be something similar to the FBI building that is in the northern suburbs for those of you that have seen that building. Next slide. And that's the end. I stand for any questions, Mr. Chair. I also have two deputy superintendents with me today filling in if there are specific questions about BCA operations that they could help answer.
Thank you, Ms. Knutson. Members, do we have any questions for Department of Public Safety? Seeing none, thank you again, Ms. Knutson, for coming by and present on behalf of the Department of Public Safety.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next up is the Water and Soil Resources Board. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Chair. John Jasky, Executive Director with the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources, and thank you for having the opportunity to provide the overview of the governor's recommendations on our two items. And if you're ready to go, Mr. Chair, I'll proceed.
Please proceed, Director.
Thank you. Yes, we have two items, both of which have statutory connections, one through, in essence, a regulatory component, and another through a voluntary component tied to a federal leveraging opportunity. So Ms. Angie Becker-Kadelka, Assistant Director, is also with me today to answer any questions, and she's going to run the screen. So Angie, take it away. So the first one is a $20 million request, which has two components to it, a $14 million bonding component and a $6 million cash component. And I'll explain it in a minute, the reasons those two pieces are part of this proposal. But before I do that, I just wanted to give you an example of what this is about. This statute that was put into Minnesota law going on 20, 25 years ago now has the state of Minnesota through Bowser replacing wetlands that are filled, typically, sometimes dry, but mostly filled when a local board authority, a county, a city, a township, expands their roads for safety reasons. And you can see, you know, here's an example that the road corridor is already there. They've got to do an expansion to make sure that road meets safety standards from DOT and other places. And this happens, you know, multiple times in multiple places. Of course, they try to avoid the wetland first. And then when we do this, the best way to do it is to make a good alternative site, you know, an ecologically sustainable site someplace else. And what we've done then is we bundle all of these small impacts into a place then that can do that ecological restoration and that mitigation and satisfy both state and federal permitting. And you can see on the right, then there's an example of when a bunch of small little impacts get summed up and consolidated into a larger site that has the better benefits and, you know, the better efficiency from a public cost perspective as well. So this program has been around for 20 or 25 years and it's been traditionally funded through this source. The reason there's two components to it is that obviously the asset that the state secures includes a conservation easement in perpetuity as well as the work to restore that site. And then the cash portion is when we need to buy some existing credits from the private market, which we also, you know, have in Minnesota, thankfully, we can do that. And here's a table showing, you know, the balances. We follow these lines, which are watershed boundaries or basin boundaries, and this is something that's important to keep the balance of these credits, the mitigation, close to where the impacts have occurred, right? And you can see we have some balances here that are getting low, or some of them, in fact, that have gone to zero. And so those are places where we need to buy some credits just to get ourselves back to a proper balance. And then we use the bonding piece to build sites, because it's cheaper to build them than it is to buy them. But, you know, depending on road projects that are funded, and of course we are expecting and seeing actually a rise in that with the infrastructure dollars, we will see more than likely a greater need for this going into the future. So, Mr. Chair, that's the first item, and now we'll switch to the, oh, I'm sorry, one more slide here. This just shows a little bit more of the steps along the way. It takes, you know, several years to get these projects located, acquired, designed, and then established. And then we have to wait a few years to make sure that those, the plant communities in particular, come back so they can be then certified as having established the credits, both at a state and federal level. So it takes, you know, multiple years to do this, and that's why it's important to keep this funding, you know, going on a predictable and sufficient streamline. Next one. The second one, Ms. Chair, members, is the last installment of what we call the Minnesota CREP, CREP, which is the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program. And this is a program that allows us to take state money and then leverage federal dollars, typically somewhere between, you know, an equal amount or greater in many cases, to buy land, to restore it for conservation purposes, right? Again, it's that same idea of a permanent conservation easement with the land restored, you know, on top of it. You can see here are some of the things that are components of that. It's, you know, it's voluntary, it's locally administered through the soil and water conservation districts. And the next slide, I think, will show a little bit more about the leveraging piece of this and the other components that have been brought to bear from the state to make sure this is successful. You can see here there's been, you know, several funding sources, and this idea of each of them contributing is the way I think this has been, you know, pitched, and I think also funded. You know, you can see the Clean Water Fund, Outdoor Heritage Fund have done a lot. The Capital Investment Fund has contributed already, and we're hoping to get that last $9.9 million to finish this off. Mr. Chair, members, I think that's the end of my presentation, and so I'll be ready to take any questions or if members have any.
Thank you, Director. Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Director Jashke. I have two questions. One is on the local road replacement, and was helpful, and I don't know if you can put those numbers back up again for the regions on, you've hit zero already, and with the, I'm concerned with the federal infrastructure bill, if we're going to be doing roads, that there'll be the potential for more impacts where you may run out of credits when we are not in session. So we would not be able to have that flexibility for construction projects to occur. One, if we don't get you the dollars, and two, if we don't get you enough dollars to tide you through construction before the legislature comes back again next year. So I guess my question is, what's the burn rate anticipated with the federal transportation dollars coming in? That's the first question.
Director Jashke.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, we don't have a, you know, precise number yet. You know, I know even DOT is working on trying to determine, you know, what additionality this might lead to, and then how much of that, of course, will get to the local jurisdictions, right, where in this case, this program has to be responsive. We will be working on that. We know that it's going to be going up, right? I mean, that's a given. We just don't know the rate of the increase at this point in time, and we'll be doing that, you know, over the course of the year, and talking to you again next year, most likely, about that. The one thing I will say about the balances here, that's why that cash component is so important. So if those situations come up, we have an option to get some credits and not stall road projects because they can't get their permits, right? That's the key part of this. So I think once we have a better sense from, you know, that federal bill and how much of it will get to the counties, cities, and townships for their work, we'll have a better sense of that. But you're right, the demand or the need for these dollars is really directly proportional to the amount of road building activity in the state.
Chair Hansen.
Mr. Chair, so for construction to occur, we need to be prepared and have the funds there to anticipate what's coming. Is that correct?
Director Johnson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of Hansen, yes. I mean, the idea, and you know, frankly, the law, you know, both at the federal and state level has requirement to have these credits in place before the impacts occur. You can't do negative spending, so to speak, and fill wells without a credit, you know, somewhere already established. We do, as noted in that slide, it takes several years, and that's why it's important to get going now. And then some of those credits will be available in, you know, maybe at the most, 3 years or longer, maybe 5 years. And then that's the balances that we have to work with 5 years from now. So we have to keep working on this consistently.
Chair Hansen.
And then to the CREP program, if you could maybe put that dollar summary up. We traditionally think of CREP and meeting the contract with dollars, but the contract also was with acres. Is that correct, Director Jashke?
Director Jashke.
Representative Lee and Representative Hansen, yes, it is an agreement between the state of Minnesota via the governor and the USDA Ag Secretary, and it has an acre cap in it, right? And that's the way they operate that program. And then underneath that cap, they are committed to funding it until the state or the partner, you know, no longer is able to participate or the cap is reached. And so we have a 60,000 acre cap. We're about in the mid 40,000 acre range right now, and we kind of expect that that's about as far as we're going to get. We're not going to get to 50,000 acres because the land values have increased quite noticeably between the time the agreement was signed and today. And that's just fine. You know, we knew that we wanted to make the cap as high as we could get the USDA to agree. And so that's where we're at, Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair and Director Jashke. So, if we provided additional dollars to CREP above the 9.9, because we are below the acre cap, we could still leverage the $2 to $1 coming in because we have not reached that cap. So with one-time money, if we had cash that went, or bonding, that went towards CREP, we would still be able to leverage that money under the agreement with the federal government. Is that correct?
Director Jaskey.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, yes, that's correct. Actually, you know, so we expect there'd probably be 15,000 acres remaining. And so that would, you know, take somewhere in the neighborhood of $120 million, of which, you know, the state would be looking to provide maybe a third of that, right? So you can do the math, I guess, from there. You know, if we had $40 million, we could probably get pretty close to that 60,000 acre cap.
And Mr. Chair, if I could do one more.
Chair Hansen.
And are there people lined up for the program, Director Jashke?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, yes, we've had great demand for this. You know, again, the way this works is that we pay, in essence, a rental rate that then gets supplemented with a state conservation easement payment. And these are targeting these very marginal agricultural lands, you know, and most of these are wetland restorations. You know, we did some buffers, we did some wellhead protection areas. Both of those are important too, but you know, we get multiple benefits from those projects. We hold water, we create habitat, you know, we provide the climate benefits as well. So yes, there would be a good opportunity there to take advantage of that existing agreement.
Representative Erdahl.
There, I'm muted now. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Jashke. Following up a little bit with one of Representative Hansen's earlier questions on the road wetland replacement. You know, he's correct. It seems like every other year we run into a crisis where it looks like you're going to run out of money unless we get some more in there. But it seems to me, didn't we maybe last session even pass a regulation that there be yearly reporting on this so that we would know if there is a crisis coming, so we could appropriate money earlier if we needed to? You recall that?
Director Jaskey.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, yes, there is we do annual reporting. And one other thing I think you also mentioned is that the legislature gave us some flexibility to move credits between those areas, you know, so that we don't encounter a negative balance and shut down a road project. When we do that, we burn the credits at a higher rate, right? So we really don't want to do that because then we're going to have to spend more money for the same thing. So Yes, there are some, you know, if you want to call it fail safes in the system, and I thank you for pointing that out.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Jaschke. Well, I'm glad to hear that because, you know, I think it was my legislation, and that was the purpose was to make sure that we don't run into these crisis situations again. So please continue to keep us informed.
Thank you. All right, seeing no other questions, thank you, Director, and the board for coming by. Next up on the agenda is the Department of Education. Welcome to the committee, Assistant Commissioner. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Bobby Burnham, and I am the Assistant Commissioner for the Office of Teaching and Learning at MDE. And today I will be presenting the Governor's Capital Budget Recommendation regarding the Literacy Construction Grants. Next slide. You can see on this slide that there are 12 regional public library systems with 355 public library locations. We have currently 9 bookmobiles, at least 1 public library in every county, and you can see some of the 2020 usage data there. And actually, during the COVID pandemic, usage certainly did not drop, but really served as a core community meeting space for families during the COVID pandemic. Next slide. So the Public Construction Grant Program is statute, of course, statute 134.45. Eligible applicants are cities, counties, and regional public library systems. And there are 2 types of projects. Improvement projects include new construction, renovation of existing library facilities, repair of existing library facilities, such as leaky roofs and weathered brickwork. The accessibility projects include mediation of physical barriers preventing access for all, such as putting in automatic doors, ADA compliant restrooms, upgrading lighting. And the picture on this slide is the Kimball Public Library, who was awarded $440,000 in 2019 for construction of a new facility, increasing its space from 1,010 square feet to 4,200 square feet. Next slide, please. Some data on program. This particular program is funding, has been funded 13 times from 1994 through 2020. Appropriations ranging from $1 million to $2.95 million, which was awarded in 2020. Historically, the awards are from between $1 million and $2 million. We have 170 awards made in this project lifespan, which I have data back to 1994. The average award is just over $100,000. The largest award was $1 million in 2018 for Fergus Falls, and the smallest was $614 in 1996 for White Bear Lake. The average local match is equals to $6.27 per local every dollar of state money spent. So, libraries in 70 of 87 counties have applied for and received grants. Projects total in 7 county metro, 40 projects total in the 7 county metro area, and 130 projects total in the greater Minnesota regions. The 2022 recommendation and interest, the 2022 recommendation is $1 million. And historically, $17.8 million in grant funds has drawn nearly $112 million in local support. So this grant bonding program really serves as a catalyst for public library systems to draw in local support. Prospective cities, and what I mean by a prospective city is a city employee, a county employee, or a library employee who has emailed MDE State Library Services with questions about whether there will be a grant available in 2022. So those cities are listed under the prospective cities who have contacted MDE. And the prospective counties include Blue Earth, Dakota, Douglas, Meeker, Scott, and Sibley. And that, Chair, is the end of the proposal from MDE for the library construction grants.
Thank you, Commissioner. Members, do we have any questions for the Commissioner? Chair Murphy.
Thank you very much. Does the library service have a long range plan for this $1 million?
Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair Murphy. Could you repeat the first part of that? I missed that. I'm sorry.
Does your service have a long range plan? And is that why you stayed with $1 million?
Thank you, Chair Murphy. So before the pandemic, attendance in library programs and use of meeting rooms in libraries was trending up. So as was checkouts in both print books and electric resources. So all public libraries in Minnesota offer Wi-Fi. 35% extended their Wi-Fi, and I apologize for my dog. 95% offered curbside home delivery, 80% created online programming. So we know the importance of the public library system, and as you may know, we have a new, as of I think 3 or 4 months, Director of State Library Services. And we are very motivated to do long-term planning for our state library services. And historically, this current ask is keeps in line with the historic ask of the last several years.
Chair Murphy.
Mr. Chair, in the previous capital investment bills, we changed the cap for some of the applications or some of the projects. So there won't be as many projects. Perhaps there won't, because of that cap on how much a project could receive was raised, there are probably going to be fewer projects. So this is going to, it seems to me that this would make a longer waiting list for library services or library rehabilitations, and that we should have changed the $1 million to at least $2 million if we didn't want to have a longer waiting list for a long time. But Ms. Burnham didn't mention about waiting lists, and she said that the prospective cities or the respective library systems that are going to apply for grants is based on an email that they send to the library service asking if grants are going to be available. Is there any discussion about changing the waiting lists or changing the prospective grant requests that will be coming in that would make it more efficient for the department to have an idea of what kind of projects are going to be asked for in the future?
Commissioner.
Thank you, Representative. We do, I believe, and Hannah Buckland, who is our program manager for this particular program, is on with me. And my understanding is we do, with any program, do a wide range of outreach. So my understanding is it's just not those who contact us, but once this program is released, it is communicated more broadly than to just those who have reached out to MDE.
Chair Murphy.
I have nothing more at this time.
Commissioner, of the prospective cities and counties, can you give us a dollar figure of what are they requesting, or you know, what is the amount for their projects?
Representative, I do not have those figures in front of me, but I would be happy to get those estimates. And again, they would be estimates, and get back with my program staff to see if they have an idea of what the ask will be.
Thank you, Commissioner. If you could provide that for the committee, that would be greatly appreciated.
Absolutely.
Seeing no other questions from members, thank you so very much, Commissioner, for coming on today. Next up on the agenda is the Department of Agriculture. Please identify yourself and proceed. Assistant Commissioner Bailey.
Hi, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Chair, this is Mark Abrahamson from the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I'm not sure that Commissioner Bailey is available at the moment, but I was going to provide the presentation. I can proceed if you like.
Please proceed, yep.
Okay, and I should be sharing my slides?
Go for it, yep.
Okay. All right, thank you very much. Like I said, my name is Mark Abrahamson. I'm the Plant Protection Director from the Department of Agriculture. And our bonding request is for our East Grand Forks building, which is the hub of our potato program. So this building located in East Grand Forks, I believe at least some members of the committee were able to see the building on a tour in the fall in September. So some things might look familiar to you. But this is the hub for our seed potato program and also services we provide kind of more generally to the potato industry. So our seed potato certification runs out of this building. We provide potato grading, do some surveys like potato cyst nematode, which are required for exporting potatoes to other countries. So a bunch of different services that this building is kind of uniquely suited to provide. And the building is due for some upkeep. So it was built in 1993. We've got a number of items that are just due to be addressed. This is an itemized list of some of the things that need to be taken care of. We need some work on the electrical. We've got a number of areas where lighting doesn't work. The roof has been a kind of a consistent problem and needs to be addressed. The HVAC system dates back to the building of the building, so it's 30 years old and due to be upgraded. There's some items that we'll need to cover out a general fund that are not eligible for bonding, but we're planning to do that. And in general, you know, just kind of wear and tear on the building of 30 years that needs to be addressed. We've got a few pictures that kind of highlight some of the issues with the electrical where we see the service entrance separating from the building. Like I mentioned, we've got areas where the lighting's not working that we need some work done. The roof, although it was replaced in 2008 and money was appropriated for that purpose in general funds, it's been a consistent problem every year since then. And we really need to figure out what's a better solution for addressing the roofing, because that is, of course, when the roof gets damaged, can lead to internal damage as well. Like I mentioned, HVAC, this building, it's big, it's 8,000 square feet, so it's got a few different furnaces supplying heat, and they're, like I said, they're 30 years old, so it is going to give us some money. A lot of the finishes on the floors, et cetera, are just becoming a little bit damaged, like I said, damage to the interior from, you know, water coming in when there's damage to the roof. This is kind of a neat thing about this building is we do have space in the upstairs. We're able to grow out potatoes when we need to for testing. So it's kind of a nice option. Most of that gets done in Hawaii during the winter, but for lots that come in late and can't make the boat to Hawaii, we're able to do small numbers here in East Grand Forks, which is kind of critical. And just other finishes with the building that are, like I said, just are due for some upkeep. And that is our presentation. I would be happy to answer questions if there are any.
Thank you, Director. Members, do we have any questions? Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Chair Lee. And, you know, during the tours, I would always ask about resiliency and are there any plans for putting solar, say, on the roof of this building? What's the energy efficiency opportunity? What can we do to make this a 21st rather than a 20th century model?
Director.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Hanson. That's a great question. We haven't looked specifically at solar. I think one great opportunity will be upgrading the HVAC to a energy efficient system. And so that should make a big improvement. But that's the main thing we've looked at in terms of energy upgrades.
Chair Hanson.
I'd encourage you to look at solar and find out what a cost estimate would be for that.
Members, any additional questions for the director? Chair Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Was this building built especially for this Department of Agriculture?
Director.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, to be honest, I'm not sure. It may have been, but I don't know for certain.
Because 30 years, I understand a little bit of this, but not the total thing for a 30-year-old building.
Chair Murphy, do you have a question in there?
Well, it just seems to me that from the pictures and so forth, it shouldn't be so horrendous if you were doing proper upkeep on it right along. I might be wrong, but I've been on the bonding committee for over 20 years and I've learned a lot of things in my tours and so forth. And I don't know if the Department of Ag does their own building or if admin does it or what kind of things you have, and you say you don't know, and so there's no point in me going on, but I wonder how the first inklings that there was so much damage that has to be repaired are called to our attention. How that was addressed in the very first place when it first started. But I will wait for further comments or attention at a later time, but I think we should know that.
So, Director, following up on that, do the Department of Agriculture maintain their own facilities, or are you under Department of Administration, or how do you go about upkeep, like what Chair Murphy have mentioned?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my understanding is that, you know, we're responsible as an agency for maintaining the building. To my knowledge, that's the only building that we actually own and maintain. I believe we, you know, work with the Department of Admin to do that, but it is the department's responsibility. So, you know, it's a fair point. You know, we have put money into the building in terms of, you know, other upkeep and maintenance, but I think that we are, you know, working to have a more regular schedule of maintenance implemented where we can keep on top of things better going into the future.
$377,000 is a lot. Per year.
Chair Murphy, do you have a question in that for the director,
no,
or is that a comment?
It was just a comment.
Okay. Seeing no other question, thank you so very much, Director, for coming by today on the Department of Agriculture presentation.
Thank you.
Next up, we have the superintendent of the Minnesota State Academies. Please identify yourself and proceed, Superintendent.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Terry Wilding. I am the superintendent of the Minnesota State Academies. Are you all right if I go ahead and share my screen?
Please proceed, Superintendent.
I'm just going to quickly go through an overview for some of you may not be familiar with our programs, and then I will discuss our bonding requests. We are very unique. We are a state agency, but we are also a school district. Sometimes we get confused on how we are funded. We have two campuses currently, one for the blind and one for the deaf. Some students go to both campuses. We serve students from all over the state of Minnesota. We have 60 different school districts right now that send their students to our academies. At the deaf school, we serve 18 months up to age 21. We follow the federal special ed statutes, IEPs and IFSPs. We have different programs, academics, supports include an A-plus program, which is our 18 to 21 program that looks at transition. And I'll explain why that's important as we talk about renovations. At the blind school, we start a little bit older, at age 5, kindergarten. Similar types of programs, instruction, academics, curriculum. We also include expanded core curriculum for the blind. That has independent skills, independent living skills, orientation and mobility, things that are addressed for low vision and blind students to have them navigate the world. We also have an A-plus program for 18 to 21 at the blind school. Our focus is truly on the whole child. We want that complete development. Classroom learning is wonderful, but in many areas, the world out there is not accessible. We don't just give academic support. We want to make sure our students have an equivalent education to anywhere in the public system. They have the same experiences, extracurricular activities, athletics, music, drama, clubs, and organizations are all provided. And that is part of the whole child development. It gives a balance for a well-rounded education. The other thing that is unique about us is we provide residential housing for our students that live quite a ways away and cannot be day students. They stay in our dorms during the week, arrive on Sunday, and go home on Fridays to their families. We have special activities and programs that also occur sometimes on weekends. We provide that education in after hours, after the 3 p.m. bell, into our dorm activities. When we speak of funding, just to remind you that we are a school district, but we cannot levy. We cannot collect taxes or renovations or construction projects. We are appropriated by the legislature. The funding directly comes from you. So we hope for your support with these maintaining and improvements to our campuses. Our first project for the year is renovations to our dorms. Within this, we have dorms on both campuses. At the blind school, our dorms, we have three wings or three halls. And the building was built in the early 80s. At that time, that was prior to ADA, prior to any codes that were established for accessibility. We want to update those dorm hallways. It's 42 years old, and many things that we are noticing are barriers for our blind and low vision students from becoming fully independent, learning those life skills to navigate the world. For example, our kitchen area and our laundry area, as well as our restrooms, are not fully accessible. They require adult support to do many of the things. Our students could do them independently, and we want to give that equivalent experience to our students so they are able to accomplish those tasks at home. We will be able to teach our students and become fully independent learners and great citizens for life after graduation. Our dorms continue to work at this time, but they aren't We're not increasing square footage. We are just renovating the internal structure and make them more accessible and safe to meet the different codes that are required for our students. Also energy savings, as we would do new HVAC systems and lighting systems. At the DESFO campus, we have one existing dorm. And again, the building was built in 85 years ago. We did have some renovations to that building prior, but it is not current. It's not ADA standard. Our HVAC system has no air conditioning. We use window air units to cool the building. We are looking at our A-plus program that I mentioned prior to expand into this dorm. Right now we have students that go through our system. And this is a smaller program, but we'd like to expand it and offer housing to show them how to independently live in apartments. This would apply to statewide students and upgrade this building to make it more appropriately designed to fit the program needs in our A-plus 18 to 21 transition program. We're also looking at, in that building, providing more mental health support. That space would be renovated to assist in those areas. The bonus is that it's internal work. We're not increasing square footage, we're just improving the functionality of the building for years to come. The key is that we will not be expanding any square footage. If you take a look at it, we're using our resources, making it safer, more accessible for our programs. One other emphasis is that our current students have more physical disabilities. And often we are noticing wheelchair accessibility. We don't have elevator access. It is something that we need to address to improve in these buildings. The project is $6.5 million. And that is for four renovations, three halls in the blind school and one building at the deaf school. Our second bonding request is pre-designed money. What we have been noticing is that on our campus, we have several very old buildings, specifically at the deaf school, and they range from 92 to almost one building is almost 100 years old that we're trying to maintain. What we've noticed is those buildings are not great. We're not maximizing the usage. They don't meet our current student needs as they were built over 100 years ago. The state is putting a lot of money into asset preservation to maintain and fix these buildings. What we'd like to take a look at is be more proactive in our approach. We're asking for pre-designed money to have someone come to our campus, assist us, and make recommendations for a new building to replace up to four to five aging buildings. That will give us a lot more savings for the school, for maintenance, for cleaning, for accessibility, our staff safety and student safety. So this pre-designed money is to analyze what we have currently and what would be best for our continued assistance, evaluating our buildings and making a proposal, what is the best solution for us for the future. That will include our cafeteria, our gym, our PE facilities, our career and tech education, all of those items on campus, we would hope would be able to be replaced and put into one building called the Student Center. This would reduce our square footage and make us more energy efficient, safer, and more accessible for all of our students. This building would then continue to serve students for the next 75 years. The money that we're expending on those five buildings are not meeting our needs at all. That is the second request. Our last one is our ongoing request every 2 years for our asset preservation. We have received money from the legislature the last few years, and our list has reduced, but we still have ongoing needs. Taking a look at maintaining 100-year-old buildings. Currently, what we are looking at, several of the buildings need maintaining tuck pointing on our stonework. Our heating and our boiler equipment needs to be replaced. Our walkways need to be renovated to support our blind and deaf students. That money is always put to good use. Recently, we just replaced some buildings. Their roofs and sidewalks have been completed. And there's also been some internal buildings to continue maintaining this. But once again, our campus is very old. We have two buildings on the historical registry, which requires a lot more steps and more complicated process to maintain those buildings. This is an ongoing request to just continue our maintenance on our buildings on both campuses. And that includes and wraps up my request for this year. Are there any questions or comments that you would like to ask?
Thank you, Superintendent. Members, do we have any questions for the superintendent? Seeing none, thank you so very much, Superintendent, for coming by and for the work that you're doing on behalf of all of our students here in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you.
Next up on the agenda is the last one for today, the Purpose Center for the Arts. Welcome to the committee, Dr. Ricks. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Charles Rick. I'm the Executive Director for the Purpose Center for Arts Education. And Thomas will bring up the slides. But we want to thank you for the opportunity to speak about our Purpose Center for Arts Education capital budget request. And today I'll be joined by Thomas Johnston, Finance Director. And so between the two of us, we'll make our presentation on the capital budget. Next slide. On the next slide, you can see the location of the Purpose Center. It's just located in Golden Valley off Highway 55, Olson Memorial Highway, in case you haven't been out this way. It just shows where it is. Next slide. On the next slide, I want to briefly talk about our unique roles. The Purpose Center for Arts Education has a unique role in providing arts education to students, art educators, school districts, and residents in the state of Minnesota. There are three main roles in describing the Purpose Center. One is we have a residential arts high school, and currently we have 33 of 87 counties that are represented in the two grades this year. Second is professional development and resource programs, or normally called PDR. In fiscal year 21, PDR worked with 314 school districts and 2,192 teachers and administrators across the state of Minnesota. And the third role is our statewide library. It's open to all residents in Minnesota, and it's open to the public, and they can either come to the center, to the library, or we work with people to send them materials also. Next, I'll be followed by Thomas Johnston, who is our finance director, talk about our budget capital requests. Thomas.
Mr. Johnston, please identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Thomas Johnston. Looks like I might be having some camera issues, but as long as you can hear me, I will continue on. I'd like to present our capital budget request for Purpose Center. Our two requests that we had this year were for $4 million in asset preservation funds, and then $100,000 for a school building work pre-design funds. The asset preservation funds that we're requesting, those funds are used to preserve our existing infrastructure that we have. We have buildings that are aging and have needs that we would like to address within those buildings. You can see that Purpose has been appropriated asset preservation funds the last several bonding years. But if you look at the project list that we've provided, the funding that we've been provided in the past isn't enough funds to meet the needs of those projects. So we're really hoping that we can see some funding that will give us the ability to address the projects that we have on our list here. I just want to kind of note a couple of the asset preservation projects that we're looking to do. One of them is to do some roof and exterior work on our Gaia building. Our Gaia building is where our professional development team works that Dr. Rick mentioned earlier. And I just want to note that we did similar work on our dormitory building that we're requesting for the Gaia building, but we were able to do that work for the dorm only because we were awarded emergency funding through the Department of Admin with their CAPRA funding, that capital asset preservation and restoration account. So again, we'd really like to be able to have the funds to perpetuate and not have to rely on emergency funding to address some of our capital needs. A couple of our projects that we're looking to work on are some restroom updates. We had a restroom study done back in 2016 that really showed some compliance issues with our access to our bathrooms. Some of them weren't up to ADA standards, and we would like to address those compliance issues with these funds. And one of the projects I'd like to address on the asset preservation is our campus sidewalks. I have some pictures on the next slide that you can see. They're old and cracking it, and they really show a safety hazard for our students walking on the campus. And then we also have public people that walk through our campus from time to time. So it really kind of has a negative public appearance for the agency having such sidewalks and some disrepair areas. So here's a couple of pictures. The picture on the left is of our Gaia building. We'd be looking to do roofing and some exterior work on that. Middle picture is just a picture of our bathroom. It's old and updated and needs to be up to ADA compliance standards with some of our stuff in our bathrooms. And the picture on the right is just one little area of our sidewalk. You can see it's in pretty bad disrepair and has an extreme safety hazard and tripping hazard for our staff and students at the school. And the other request that we had was for $100,000 in school building work pre-design funds. And there's two pieces to this request. The first piece is to really address our front entryway to our school building. As we all know, school safety is a pretty big deal. So we had in 2018, we had a security assessment done for our building. And they noted some recommendations for the front area, especially coming into our school building. Right now, our security office is down the stairs and around the corner from our front entryway, and is recommended to have that space moved to the front of the building to really vet visitors and guests that are coming in through our building. They also recommended redesigning how our traffic flows into the building, and you'll be able to see some pictures on the next slide. And then also reinforcing our front entryway with some bollards or equivalent to that area, and then also to harden our reception area. And then another piece that came out of that was we have a handicap lift right on our vestibule right inside the front door. And currently that lift only goes up to our second floor. So if somebody's using that lift, they have to use the lift, go up to the second floor, walk down the hall, get in the elevator to go back down to the first floor. So we'd want to reconfigure that so that lift has access to both floors of our building. So here's just a couple quick pictures. On the left here is the front of our building. So again, looking to enhance some security improvements there. The middle slide is when you first walk into the building, you can see traffic flow. It can go either up or down. We'd want to be able to kind of corral how that traffic flow goes in there and have our security office in this portion of the building to be able to vet those people that are coming through our building. And on the right is the handicap lift. You can see that you enter here on the vestibule and it only goes up to that first floor landing of our building. And then the other piece of the pre-design that we're looking at is an expansion of our performance hall and auditorium. Currently right now, the maximum seating capacity of our auditorium is 173. So what we're really looking to have is a space that we can hold our entire student body and staff to be able to have those total school-wide functions and have that whole student body together at once. So those are our requests for this year, and we will stand ready for any questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Johnston, and thank you, Dr. Ricks. First up, we have Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to ask the testifier, and if I miss this, I'm sorry, but what is the enrollment now at Perpich, and what has been the trend? Are you stable, up or down?
Dr. Rick.
Mr. Chair and Representative Rudolph, our enrollment this year at START was 171 students, I believe, and it has trended upwards the past 3 years I have been here. You know, 10 to 15%. And we're currently taking reviewing applications for the coming fall. So I think the current trend is we're maintaining, and then we'll see how the current round of applications come in.
Representative Erdahl.
Okay, that's encouraging. Thank you, Mr. Chair. What do you have a capacity? I mean, what would be the most students you could accommodate, Mr. Erdahl?
Representative Erdahl. by statute, it's 310 students. So there's room for growth there.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, any additional questions for Dr. Rick or Mr. Johnston? Seeing none, thank you both so very much for coming by this morning. Members, that wraps up our presentations for today. Our next meeting is Tuesday, February 22nd, and we will receive capital budget presentations from the Minnesota Zoo, a Historical Society, the IRRB, and the Amateur Sports Commissions, and then also begin to hear GO bonding bills. This meeting is adjourned.